Welcome to the Organize 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started. Shay, welcome to the Organize 365 podcast.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
I'm super excited to have you, and I cannot wait to hear more about your story. But first, how did you originally find Organize 365?
So, you know, this phenomena podcast, you know, everybody was doing it, listening to podcasts, and it's like, I just really wasn't into it. And then back in 2018, I was like, okay, I need to get on the bandwagon here. And so I'm like, what do I like to listen to? So true crime is just one of the things that I love. And so I was listening. I'm like, you know, I really need to find something else to kind of pick me up some, because the true crime kind of brings you down. And so then I'm like, well, what else do I like? And I'm like, organizing. I love organizing. So I started searching and everything, and I'd get an Organized podcast here and there, and I'd listen to a couple, and I'm like, you know, that just doesn't click. And then I found yours, and I always start at the very beginning of the podcast. And so I listened to episode one, and I'm like, I don't think she knows me, but everything she's saying is me. And then I'd listen to the next one, and I'm like, she does not know me, but that's exactly me. And the next and the next, and I'm like, okay, I think I found my podcast. And then I got on this bench, and I would just listen the next one and the next one and the next one. And it was a lot of fun, and it did bring me out of that, you know, low of listening to the true crime, because then you get you that's so energetic and fun to listen to. So,
all right, that's got to be a new tagline we haven't had before, that listening to an organizing podcast is going to bring you out of the funk of listening to a true crime. I don't think anybody's ever said that before, Shay. I think you're going to be the first one going on record.
But yeah, so that's kind of how I started, how I found you and started listening to you. And then you're from Cincinnati, which I'm in Northern Kentucky. So.
Oh, okay. So we're pretty close.
Yeah.
Have you always lived in Kentucky?
I've lived in Kentucky, but I've lived I did live in Versailles, Kentucky, which is close to Lexington, central Kentucky. And so my husband and I moved up here in 2003. So.
Nice. Yeah. Just kind of really in the heart of the Midwest here, aren't we?
Yes.
just yes. Right there. So you mentioned your husband. Who else lives with you in your family?
So we have my daughter, Kendra, who is 11. She's getting ready to turn 12. And then my son, who is just turned 8 on Sunday. And he is a special needs kid. So, which is another reason that I felt drawn to you by listening to all of your trials and tribulations and, you know, wins and not so good wins, you know, so that part two is probably what drew me to you the most, is I can relate to you on that end too.
And it seems like you were already an organized person when you found the Organize 365 podcast. Like, you like organizing, like you thought it'd be fun to listen to an organizing podcast.
Yeah. Well, I was organized in the sense that if you came in my house, you would look around and you'd like, man, she's an organized person. My counters were clear. You know, anything you saw, you would think she's an organized person. And then you go and open the drawer or you open the door and you're like, maybe not. And so I've always been that kind of person. You know, I like things in their place. And if it gets out of place, you know, I'm like, nope, I gotta go put that back. I'll take the extra minute to go put that thing back. And so my daughter's having to live that through me, because, you know, kids don't like to put things back when they get things out. So everything she got something out the other day, and I'm like, where did you get that? Are you done with it? Go put it back up. You know, so in a sense, I've been organized, but not so organized.
So I guess outwardly you look organized. Everyone would say you're organized, but you don't feel organized maybe.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Very much.
Yeah.
So.
The internal part. Okay. So it's like 2018, you find the podcast, you're listening to it in amongst listening to your true crime podcast. And then what was the first thing you did? Like, what was the first time you like implemented something you heard or got started?
So did your podcast episode one. So then I would go and I would do that, or episode two, you know, and then I would go and do that. So that's kind of where I started. And then I started listening to your Sunday basket things, and you had, you know, all the podcasts on the Sunday basket. And then I'd go out and read about it. And I'm one of those that I'm either an all or nothing person. So, you know, I did 3, 4, 5 podcasts. I'm like, no, I just got to do it all. And so it worked out perfect because my daughter and husband were going to go to Disney, and we couldn't take my son there, too hot and all that. And I just couldn't do it with his issues that he has. So I said, perfect time, because he goes to daycare. I'll have the house to myself. And so I think I did a year's worth of organizing in 4 days. Got all your stuff. I got the box like, I don't know, two or three weeks before they left. And so I just kept it there, which was killing me because I didn't want him to know that I had done this. So as soon as they were out the door, I'm like, yes. And so I ran and I opened my box and, you know, I put it all out on the counter and I'm like, okay, what do I do now? What do I do first?
So I think what's so funny is, and I'm sure there are like 8,000 memes about this, I think media wants you to think that, like, if you get time alone, like, you want to watch movies and take hot baths and chocolates and whatever. Like, I don't know any woman who, if you give her like multiple days at home, doesn't have like their to-do list prioritized in order. And they're like getting up and they're having an extra coffee and they're getting up earlier because they're like, yes, to have my house to myself is like the biggest gift you can give me. And I mean, I love living with my grandson, but my daughter is always at our house with my grandson. And then she was babysitting in our house. Like, she doesn't go to a job. So even if I take time off work, my house still has people in it. Like, I love when Greg's like, Abby and I are going to go out to lunch. I'm like, great. It's like 90 minutes. I'm like, oh my gosh, I have my house to myself. There's just something about the freedom of, you know, no one's really checking on what you're doing. You could get nothing done, but it's almost like we race ourselves to see how yes. much can we actually get done. And it isn't even really like the family knows what you did. Like, they might notice one or two out of the 100 things you did, but you know, and you're like, yes, like I kind of got a jump start. It's almost like, you remember when you were a kid and you could play freeze tag and you could freeze people? It's almost like when your family leaves the house, it's like they're frozen and you get to run around faster and get stuff done. Yes. And when they come back, you're like, okay, unfreeze. All right, now I have to do like the regular thing. So I totally can resonate with that feeling of being able to get that time. Most people are like, don't you want to go to Disney? I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Totally happy to be the one at home, like to run around the house, which it is. It's like going to Disney to have uninterrupted time at home for yourself. And maybe, well, I think anybody that listens to this podcast agrees with us. Other people might not. But yeah, I just, when it goes long enough, then I really become cranky on the weekends. And then I like lose it. And Greg and Abby are like, why are you losing? I'm like, because you guys are always here. You're always here. And they're like, well, what do you need to get done? Because like, I don't really have a lot of household things. Like, it's not like I can say, can you guys leave me alone? Because I need to clean the kitchen. It's already clean. So I could do, oh, no, I literally want to putz around. I literally want to open this cabinet and move stuff into a different cabinet for no good reason, except to reorganize it. Like, that's just what I want to do. Like, just let me have my time.
Yes.
So I totally understand. I totally and completely understand where you were. All right. So you got that half a week to yourself in the house. How did it feel after that? Like, was there anything different at that point from having been listening to the podcast that was different than, I'm sure you'd had other periods of time where you were able to do the same thing?
So like the, you know, in your 100 day program, there were things that it's like, man, that just seems so simple, but somebody just needed to tell me. So like the whole drink cabinet thing, drink station thing. My coffee pot was here. My coffee was over here. My creamer, my, you know, everything was spread around the kitchen. It's like, man, that's genius.
Yeah, you know, all together. So
that right there was probably the one thing that it was like, this really works, you know? And then the whole putting things in zones where you need them. Mm-hmm. Those two things were probably kind of like the wow moment that it's like, I can do this. It makes sense. And, you know, it. And so to my husband, of course, I moved the towels and the utensils and, you know, after 15 years of going to, you know, one drawer, well, now you got to go to the other one. That's, you know, we still go to the other drawer sometime, but it makes more sense to be in this one drawer, you know? Yeah. So that's probably like the wow moment that, oh my goodness, this really, really works.
Okay. So what did you do after you started getting a handle on just, you know, your house had always looked organized, but now it more felt organized and it functioned the way you needed it to function in this season of life. What was the next thing you did?
So the next thing I did were, you know, the binders, and the main binder is the Warrior Mama binder. I mean, I cannot tell you how much that has helped me. There are things that you know you have, but to have it all in the one place, you know, my son, he at 3 weeks old, he had a blood clot on his brain that ended up having seizures, and he had a stroke on one side of his brain. And then 2 days later, he had a stroke on the other side, you know, so it's obviously been, we live at Children's Hospital all the time. I mean, we're there every, almost, it seems like at least once a month we're there. And so, you know, trying to get a handle on all that stuff, you know, the programs that he's in, all the devices that he has, the medical devices and things like that, you know, IEPs. It's like, you know, I've got an IEP in this box and I've got an IEP in that box. And, you know, and then an IEP meeting comes up and you're like, oh, is this the most current IEP or was this like three IEPs ago?
Oh my gosh. Yes.
So the Warrior Mama binder is the one I have spent the most on. It's been the most confusing just for me to wrap my head around, because not only does he have the programs that he's in and the IEPs, but all the medical issues. So at first I put it all in this, the Warrior Mama binder, and the binder was like this thick. I'm like, okay, this, you know, she did say when you go into a meeting, you know, you take the book and they'll take you serious, but I don't think she meant that thick of a book. You know? So I took all the medical stuff out. Now I've got his medical binder.
Yeah.
And then I have his Warrior Mama binder. And this is the story I tell everybody as to why you need this binder, especially if you have a special needs kid, is he was moving to kindergarten. So he was moving to a new school. And kindergarten here at the time was half days. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to get him transportation because I worked full time, and get him transportation from school to, it's called Redwood Rehabilitation Center. And that was his daycare and where his therapies were. And so I wanted to get transportation from there to Redwood. And it's one of those things, you know, it's not going to happen, but you're going to fight like hell for it. So I climbed up the ladder and got all the way to the top of the director of special education and got a meeting with her. And everybody had told me these horror stories and stuff. So I took my binder in there and I sat down with her and we went back and forth and back and forth. And I'm like, but you all need to provide this. This is something he needs and you need to provide it. And I said, well, we can't do that. And I said, well, what can you do for me? And she looked at me and she sat for a second. She said, how about you have all day kindergarten for him?
Yeah, right.
And I was like, oh my gosh, game changer, you know?
Yeah.
So, and I attribute it to that binder.
Right. You know, that,
that thick binder and sitting in my lap and opening it up and saying, well, you know, here's this. And, you know, I've done all this research and everything. So that right there in itself, I could have paid $1,000 for just that binder. It was so worth
it. Oh my gosh. Okay. So a couple of things. First of all, the Warrior Mama binder is a separate purchase than anything else. You could just buy it a la carte. It's not included in any programs that we have. It is designed for kids from birth to age 21 when you are their advocate for education and their medical. MAMA stands for Managing All Medical Alternatives. It's not just for the mom. Like, it's not like a mom or a dad binder. It is. So when you have kiddos that are, first of all, there is no typical kid. No. But if your child qualifies for extra services from the government, from medical, from education, from whatever, you need to be the coordinator of that. Like, you are the coordinator. That's your job, is to coordinate all of these other services that are outside of your house that will help your child. And if they have really any diagnosis under the age of 21, there's going to be a medical and there's going to be an educational component. It would be like for an adult saying there's going to be a work and there's going to be a medical component. Like, so it's, their school is their work. But when your kids are under the age of 21, there's just a lot of rules and laws that apply to how you can get more help in supporting kids that qualify, gifted and those that are struggling. Like, it doesn't matter. So the Warrior Mama binder has like a workbook in it where it's basically like, if you told me your child just got a diagnosis, these are the words I would literally say to you if we were having coffee for half a day and we were trying to put together all the information that you have. So that's kind of what the workbook is. And then we have the whole 2.0 slash pockets in there. So they're pink, purple, blue, and green. Because you have medical, which is pink, purple, which is your school, blue, which are all the people that help you coordinate the care for your child, and then green, which is the money that pays for it, or the grants, or the administration, or whatever. But I do say, and I love that you brought this up, Shay, is if you have so my kids had ADHD. That is a medical diagnosis. And yes, there is medication that we did do with our kids that went along with that. But it wasn't like we were going back to the doctor every month for brand new like information on ADHD. We didn't have that much medical information where we needed a whole medical binder. But if your child has Down syndrome or has had a stroke, like you mentioned, or has had cancer or something where like you literally have doctors on staff, like Abby has a medical binder and a Warrior Mama binder. Joey just had a Warrior Mama binder. He didn't need a medical binder because his medical was not that complicated that it needed a whole binder, but Abby's was, and it sounds like your son's is as well. What's interesting about children probably is true about adults, but they don't really ask these questions in the medical community for adults, but they do for children. When you're at your pediatrician's appointment or a specialist appointment, they will ask you questions about school and they will ask you what you're getting qualified for at school. You can get PT, OT, you know, speech. You can get all these things that are actually medical interventions. And when you're at school, they will ask you for substantiation from the medical community that you actually need these services provided at school because they are medical related, or they will want to know the most up-to-date medical results that you have to add into the IEP to substantiate what they're already doing so that they're not like doing double duty. When you get qualified for an IEP for your child, they will literally run a whole battery of tests. And when you determine that you want to have a educational review done to see if your child qualifies for an IEP, you will ask for a full evaluation. And that full evaluation will have pieces that your pediatrician does, pieces that the school does, pieces that psychologists will do, psychiatrists will do. They'll test vision, they'll test speech, they'll do an IQ test. They use really wraparound services to figure out not only where are the supports needed, but kind of what is the cause of the supports that are needed. And sometimes one cause will then lead you to additional tests that need to be done. So if you have an IQ test done, sometimes those results will show that you need to have another test done. Or you may not realize, but your child may need glasses. And so when they do the vision test, and that's why I think they do it for almost everyone, once they do that, they realize, oh my goodness, this child needed glasses and nobody knew. And then all of a sudden, all these other things you thought your child needed are not relevant because really the glasses fix that problem. So they run through all of these tests in order to figure out which ones need to be done. And then also priority order. Like, there's only so much that can be afforded and can be accommodated. And there's only so much that a child can do at one time. Like, okay, here are 89 things you need to work on. Okay, but you can't work on them simultaneously. Like, you have to triage and figure out which ones are going to be most important. And if you either are in school all day or you're pulled for three different services, is it more important that you're pulled for the three services or that you get the classroom instruction that's going on and these three services are going to be done in off school hours or you're going to do one of the three? So it's a gigantic puzzle and you're in charge of it. Okay. So you have to know, because it's kind of like when you're in a meeting with a doctor or their school teacher or whatever, they don't know everything you know. And you can't say, okay, before we get started, let me give you the 4-hour history of my child. Like you just kind of have to have all this information. And as you're hearing from whatever professional you're working with, you go, oh, you know what? You don't realize that after the first stroke, there was a second stroke. Oh, well, that's a much bigger deal than if you only had, you know, a stroke on one side of your brain. That's a totally different way you're going to approach what you do with the child. So making an IEP minor, did you feel this way, Shay? This is how I felt. It was hard to make it, not just because there was so much paper. Definitely, you have triplicate of everything and you realize you have three of something that you only needed one of, and there's something that you don't even have at all you have to go find. So that was frustrating. But also, it's like to see in black and white everything that your kids are struggling with and have done up until this short time in their life, it is hard. It gets really hard emotionally to see it all in black and white and be putting it into a binder in chronological order. Was that hard for you?
Oh gosh. It was hard in the beginning and it gets, you know, even harder as you go on, because as they get older, you hope they develop more in this area or that area, and they haven't in this area, but maybe they have in this other area, you know. Yeah. It's just, you know, with the IEPs alone, you know, I got all kinds of books and I read, you know, here's what you need to do when you go in an IEP meeting. Here's what you're going to say. Because if you don't say very specific things, or if you say something, you know, they may take a different way and, that's not what it is. So I was taking notes and all that. And then his special ed teacher that he had for kindergarten and first grade, she has been a tremendous resource, because she still sees him, not during school because she moved to a different school, but she has all that knowledge and knows what the terms are. And so, you know, several weeks before we have an IEP meeting, I bring out the old one and I'm like, here's what this one looks like. And, you know, what terms, what should I say? What should I not say? Is there something I want on the IEP that's not on there? So, you know, IEPs alone are just overwhelming. And then to add all the other medical stuff in, you know, he has a wheelchair, he has a walker, he has a talking device, you know, tracking all that stuff. You know, he has speech OT and PT at school during the school, but we also go to Redwood and he gets speech and PT and OT there. You know, so tracking all that and getting the different therapists to talk to each other, because you don't want one PT working on something and the other PTs working on something else. So it's a great place to house everything, to track everything that you're needing to make sure everybody's on the same page. Because you do, you have so many specialists, so many doctors, therapists, teachers. Yeah.
Yeah. You reminded me, I forgot about that. So when you get an IEP, the first thing you do in the state of Ohio is called a multi-factored evaluation. That's that big, huge evaluation they do to see if they qualify for an IEP. And an IEP is an individualized education plan. Then that individualized education plan lasts for 12 months. And then you do a second one, and then you do a third one, all based off that first MFE, multi-factored evaluation. Then after 3 years, you have to re-qualify for the IEP. You have to redo all those tests that you did to qualify in the first place. And sometimes with one of my kids, their reason why they qualified for the multi-factored evaluation would change. So a lot of kids qualify for a speech IEP in preschool because, I mean, what else are you going to evaluate? I mean, they're three, they're four, they're five. Like, you don't know that. You don't know it's dysgraphia. Like, you don't know what it is. They're like three, four, five, and they're having trouble communicating. So most kids end up under the classification of speech. There are like, I think, 7 or 9 different classifications. One is speech. Another one that seems to be for younger kids could also be autism. And that would be a medical diagnosis. So you get that, let's say, speech IEP. And then when it's been 3 years and now the child is six and they go and they redo that multi-factored evaluation to see if they still qualify for an IEP, often it doesn't stay as a speech IEP. Often that's when they'll say, okay, it's a learning disability. It is whatever, some OHI is other health impaired, which is where I think ADHD lands. But also over time, those designations like OHI, I don't know if that's still a thing. For a long time, autism wasn't a diagnosis. It was other health impaired. Now it's actual own qualification. So as your child ages through this whole school system, how they qualify children and what you get for that qualification changes. So what you got in preschool may be something totally different when your child's in eighth grade. And if you have a fifth kid and they're starting preschool, they would, even if they had the same profile as your older child, they would qualify for something completely differently. So I did exactly as you did. And I sat down with this teacher who was in the district, not in the district I was in, but a friend of ours. And she read through all of our paperwork. And she had a child who was 2 years ahead of us. And she said, oh, yeah, that's what we had before. Here's what we're getting now. Here's how many minutes we're getting. Here's what we're getting it for. Here's what we're calling it. Here's how we're wording it. Because these IEPs are legal documents. They go from one state to the next because every state has their own education system. But the IEP is a legal document that could go from state to state. I don't think a 504 does. You can correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think a 504 does, but an IEP and an MFE, those go from state to state, which is important. If you're going to move, you'll find that different states have completely different services. Here in the state of Ohio, if you have an IEP, let's say for autism, you can get $20,000 through the John Peterson Scholarship to take to a private institution to educate your child based on what's on your IEP. So it's like you're a mini lawyer, Shay. We're all acting like lawyers.
We are. And, you know, they have advocates too that, but those are so few and far between that I know another friend of mine whose daughter is in my son's class, she was telling me she had to get an advocate and there was only one in the state of Kentucky. And
I worked with the advocate in our school district and she really set me back further. Because she had been an advocate for so long in the school district that she now knew the school. Like when she was a new advocate, she was really good for the parents, but she'd been in the district so long that she now is an advocate for the state and what they could and couldn't do. And she actually got things out of my IEP. I was like, and then I will say we took one of our kids out of the public school system and put him in a private school before the John Peterson Scholarship was available and just paid for it out of pocket because that's what we wanted to do with our child. So there is a point where your child is going to need more than the state can provide. And so you take what the state can provide and then you add on to that. Like the state cannot provide everything for every child. So I just would always advocate for whatever seemed most reasonable and logical and obviously that they could do. Like as you were telling your story, I'm like, all day kindergarten, like, don't they have all day kindergarten? Like that. So you're asking for one thing they can't do. They're providing this other thing. Like, yes, we'll take all day kindergarten and then I will do transportation myself. So just look at what your state specializes in. What do they do well with? And how can you use that to supplement what you also will do for your child? And I'll be honest, I know people who have switched states based on whatever their child's diagnosis is, because there are certain states that are better for just different diagnoses. And sometimes it's worth moving states in order to get a education that would be more appropriate for your child.
Well, and that's what, you know, being in Kentucky, we were in the, they call it first steps in Kentucky. I'm not sure what they call it in Ohio, but it's like that first 3 years, you know, and then you kind of get kicked out and boom, you're on your own. Yeah. So that, you know, that was an eye-opening experience, but one of our therapists, we had been talking about moving and they actually said, don't move from Kentucky as long as you're in first steps to Ohio until after you're out of first steps. See? So, and she lived in Ohio. And so she knew, you know, the rules and things there that you could get. So we ended up not moving regardless, but you know, if you do, you have to consider all those things.
Well, you move for all kinds of reasons. Yeah. It's just, it is interesting. And the more you, I mean, we all love our children and we all want the best for them. And we all think that they are perfect in our eyes. Right. And so when you are to the point where you need a warrior mama binder and you're advocating with the medical community and the school district, I mean, it's hard because you are arguing for your kid's limitations and you don't want to believe your child has limitations. And mm-hmm. sometimes to advocate best for their limitations, you have to really dive into how limited this specific thing is. And in doing that, it just tears at your heart because you're literally having to then compare them to their peers and then compare them. And it's just a constant mourning. Like for probably 14 years, I was just constantly mourning what I thought was going to be and what I thought we would be able to intervene and change and what we couldn't. And I remember the kids were probably like 12 or 10 or 12. And the gap between what was happening with their peers and what was happening with them was getting wider and wider and wider. And I was like, I do not understand how this gap is going to narrow at all. Because like when you have a little kid and you could put them in like occupational therapy at the age of 2 and 3, and then they go to 4 day a week preschool and they go to all day kindergarten. Well, their peers are maybe going to preschool 2 days a week or not even going to preschool or going to kindergarten half a day. So you're like chasing to get ahead, to get your kids a little bit more, a little bit more. But once you hit first grade, like there is no more chasing to get ahead because they're all getting the same amount of schooling. And I remember an administrator saying to me, you know, this is going to be fine. And I remember going, there's no way this is going to be fine. Like, how are we going to have functioning adults here? Like, I was just like, there's no way. And Shay saw before we started, Joey came in and gave me a hug. Like, he's an awesome adult. My kids are awesome adults. We always say that you need to be a well-rounded person. Like you need to do all these things until you're an adult. And then we're like, you should go deep into one thing and become an expert. So it's so terrible for these kids that they're judged on being great in all subjects, in all social experiences, in all extracurriculars. And then as soon as you become adult, like me, you can dive really deep on home organization, which is the nerdiest thing in the world. There's like 3 people who do this. And now I could be an expert in that and have a whole living based on it. You couldn't do that in school. Trying to get our kids to do all these things. And then when they become an adult, they are able to do their unique thing and they're awesome and it's great, but it's really hard navigating school. It's just hard navigating it because they have to pass all these different subjects.
Oh yeah. And you know, I think with COVID, that kind of really, you know, brought it because you know, my kids, because of all of his medical issues, we had to stay in lockdown. And, you know, obviously a lot of schools shut down, but then they opened back up and kids could go back with masks. Well, I couldn't send him. And then I couldn't send my daughter because she could easily go catch it, bring it home. And then, you know, so we did virtual school for him the whole first grade. And because he is special needs, I had to be there 100% of the time. Luckily, my daughter was old enough and, you know, she knew what time she had to be online. She knew what homework she had to do. You know, she could do all that on her own. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness. But, you know, that's when I really saw, you know, how all of this is and how important it is. And, you know, we were doing therapy online. That mm-hmm. was my biggest thing. I mean, that was my most scary moment or whatever is because all of his therapies went away, you know, until we could figure out how to get it online and virtual. And so then, you know, here I am, a mom, a teacher, a therapist, you know, and wife, you know, it mm-hmm. just, you know, so COVID really did me in, but it mm-hmm. opened my eyes to a lot of things. And so, you know, it's tough, but you figure out how to make it work and you find things that can help you make things work. And that's, you know, this binder. I mean, that it was a lifesaver. Yeah. I mean, yeah, could I have done it without it? Yeah, but, you know, I would have even been more stressed and more crazy than I am by having it. So,
well, and I know we really deep dove into that, but I think that when you need a Warrior Mama binder, and it's like 1 out of every 2 families, it's not like we're talking to like the 5% of families that are going to need a Warrior Mama binder. Like it's at least 1 of every 2 families that you run into with kids that need an IEP binder for one of their kids. It's just the reality of life right now. So I'm sure there are many people listening who are like, yeah, I have one and I agree, or maybe that's the thing that I need. I didn't realize that I could organize my thoughts and my brains in that way and bring it with me physically and then be like, hey, so thank you for sharing your story and letting us kind of rabbit trail on that. So,
well, hopefully I've helped at least one person.
Yeah, I am sure. And also, you feel so alone when you're advocating for your kids. Mm-hmm. And
oh gosh, yes.
We're so together. We are all advocating for our kids and we're all trying to do the best we can. You know, Greg and I, during COVID, were like, so glad we don't have like school age kids at home. Like, we finished up Joey's college at the end of the first, you know, just right at the end mm-hmm. of the first lockdown. But no, like, no, no, could not have done it. And I have friends that are like, well, I couldn't like run a business. I was like, I'll take that over. Yeah, no, couldn't do the other. There's no way, no way. So Shay, what do you think that you have more of now that you are living a more organized life?
So believe it or not, I actually do have less stress. I still have stress, but it's come down several notches. You know, I have talked about the Warrior Mama binder, but you know, and that was another thing I loved about one of your podcasts or several of them is you don't need a filing cabinet. And, you know, it's to be able to go, because even if you do have a filing cabinet, you know, all your medical operation reference stuff, it's all mixed in together.
Right.
Where, you know, at least now with the binders, I've got the medical and the medical, the reference and the reference, you know, the financial and the financial. So if I need something, you know, I can just go straight there. And my husband is getting ready to go to Spain for a week with work. And he's like, I need my passport because I need to go get my real ID and stuff. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I marched right into the office. I pulled out the binder and I'm like, here it is, you know. So though that's where it becomes yeah. so less stressful are the binders. I mean, the organization, the 100-day program, you know, after you've done it and you've gotten the hang of it and stuff, it, you know, it kind of comes natural to you. And so right. these binders were my next step, and they have all been a lifesaver. I mean, the one definitely, but these other, you know, they've been a lifesaver. So they've brought my stress level down a whole lot.
That is awesome. So do you think you have any more time now, or how are you using your less stressed life?
Yeah. So, you know, as I told you and that I pretty much live at Children's, but, you know, they're the reason my son is alive. And that's the one thing I wanted to do is to give back to them. And so I am actually joining their family advisory council. Oh, and great. So they meet once a month, but you know, that's something that I have just wanted to do ever since Logan had his brain injury, is what can I do and what can I give back to him? Now we do, they have a walk every year that we do and raise money for him, but there's just more, you know, I just don't feel like, you know, raising $5,000 a year is enough. And so I'm really, really excited to get started on that. And so that's what I'm going to do with my time.
That is awesome. So is there any advice that you'd give to somebody who's just starting out?
Yeah, unless you are someone like me that is, you jump in and you do it all at once. It's all or nothing. You know, you don't need to do that. Is to take it slow, take one step at a time, take a deep breath, you know, take pride in the one thing that you did accomplish, because it is a huge accomplishment, no mm-hmm. matter how large or how small it is. I mean, getting a drawer organized, I'm sorry, that is a huge accomplishment, you know,
yes.
And that is probably what I would say is just, you know, take a deep breath. The one thing I did forget to mention that I love that I listened to a podcast that you said, and I have been applying it over and over now, is just do that one more thing, mm-hmm. you know? And so I'll be cooking supper and I'll clean up or whatever. And you know, what's that one more thing I can do just to make the next day go smoother? And it's maybe either, you know, fix the coffee pot and set it on a timer so it goes off the next, you know, morning. And so that's the mantra that I have taken from you most recently that I use and love it. And it, and again, it's one of those things that's so simple, mm-hmm. but you just need someone to tell it to you to do it. And you have the life in you and the encouragement and the motivation that you give to us to want to do it. So thank you so much for that.
Of course. You know, I think why that works for me is because before I did just one more thing, it was either, okay, I'm done with this, so I'm going to go read a book and take a bath, like I'm done. Or I would go and I would consult a to-do list and see how many things I could get done before I felt worthy of going and taking a bath. So instead of doing either of those, which are kind of extreme, I was like, okay, I'm done with this. Is there one more thing I can do before I take that bath? Yes. Okay. I'll just do that and then go versus look at the whole list. When I would look at the whole list, they'd be like, oh my gosh, there's so much to do. I don't really have time for that. All right, I'll do these five things. And I'd be so depleted by the time I got to the bath. So that one more thing, I've taken my bath at like 6 p.m. You guys, I guess it's like a low bar here. But that one more thing was kind of like a cherry on top versus like, if you ever go back to the to-do list, like you're done. Cause then it's just too much. It's too much. Well, Shay, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing your story. It's been a delight.
I have really enjoyed it. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to do it.
Are you ready to share your transformational story with me and the rest of the Organize 365 community? We would love to hear it. Please go to organize365.com/Wednesday and fill out an application. I cannot wait to see your application in my email inbox.